Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Jim Rolfes, the Consumer Product Safety Commission's Chief Information Officer. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
So it's been quite a while since I've had the CPSC CIO on, so there's some older priorities to start with. But before we go there, let's talk about you for a second. You became the CIO of the Consumer Product Safety Commission back in November. Talk a little bit about your transition and talk a little bit about your background. Where else have you worked in or out of government?
I've been in government for about 25 years, actually a little bit more, and I've worked in small agencies. See a couple of bureaus in Department of Interior, cabinet level at DOI. Even did a couple of details at OMB, one in the eGov office and one in the Office of Personnel and Performance Management, working in support of performance. Most recently, I came from the Bureau of the Fiscal Service in the Department of Treasury, where I was the deputy CIO for a couple of years, but for the last 8 months, I was functioning as the chief data officer with the official title of the executive director for financial data transparency. So that's where I came from. CPSC was a really attractive option for me. I've always been interested in becoming a small agency CIO. Small agencies, I think, have some challenges, but they also have a lot of opportunities. They have focused missions. They have smaller communities so that you can get to know the people. You can tend to make decisions faster. The bureaucracy tends to be more streamlined. And all of that means that you can be more agile and you can make change much more quickly. Also, as a CIO, I think that you can see the impacts of your change much more effectively. So when I was at the cabinet level, we'd make changes, and sometimes it was very difficult to tell what the impact of those were. But at the bureau level and small agency level, you can actually see what those impacts are. So coming here was a very good decision for me.
It's interesting that sometimes how people end up at certain agencies. Did you end up just doing the regular application process, applying? Did someone come find you? Did you have some kind of connection in a good way to somebody who maybe you worked with them before?
I did do the regular application, but I did know somebody who had worked here previously, and I spoke with them before I applied, and they said they had very positive things to say about the organization. The review process, the interview process, was one of the most grueling processes I'd experienced in government. And government, of course, that can be pretty challenging, but very, very rigorous. A lot of reviews.
And how's the transition been? I mean, you worked at Treasury, you worked on data. When you talk about the executive director of financial data transparency, we're talking there about the Data Act in many ways, I imagine, plus time at OMB. You know, if you look at your background, there's not a lot saying consumer product safety, but at the same time, being a CIO, as I've heard many times, is being a CIO.
A lot of background in data. And I've worked in a number of different organizations, nothing particularly focused in the consumer product safety area, but I think that the range of experiences that I did have, I think that that was a factor that I think gave the leadership here confidence in selecting me.
I think it's always fascinating to find out how people end up where they are. I mean, if you look at, just as you talked through your background, I thought it was interesting. You had some wide-ranging experience. It all comes together as the CIO now, which, let's talk about that role as a CIO. How do you support the CPSC mission? I found a very interesting comment from Commissioner Robinson, who says the new CIO will be a, quote, visionary thinker with innovative ideas to shepherd CPSC into the new era. Sounds like you got a lot of weight on your shoulders.
Yeah, well, I certainly hope I can live up to those expectations. And I've met with Commissioner Robinson a couple of times, and we share many interests on data and innovation. For a small agency, and this is another advantage of small agencies, is that the roles tend to be fairly broad, and we have the opportunity to provide people have the opportunity to provide support in lots of ways. So, of course, I provide the common IT services for the organization, the standard help desk and infrastructure support, and we facilitate development efforts. We also get the opportunity to participate on the mission side to provide advice on technology matters relating to products. That's something that I really like. I really enjoy the opportunity to work with the mission. We also get the opportunity to help out in unexpected ways. So, for instance, if we have somebody on our staff, this happened one time, who had a special language skill, they helped out the international national program reviewing some product safety language translations. So that was a nice thing. So ultimately, the whole organization is focusing on the mission. Even though we work in IT, we're all very much focused on the core safety mission, protecting people from being hurt or being killed by unsafe products. So that's very, very exciting here.
Trying to get your head around the mission, has that been tough? I mean, has there been a big learning curve? How did you go about as CIO learning really what the CPSC does?
It happened in a couple of ways. So it really started sort of through that grueling interview process that I mentioned a couple of minutes ago. And that was it was a tough process, but it also gave me a lot of opportunity to get a sense of the leadership and the way the organization worked. And so through that, I got to meet both of the executive directors, the executive director, all of the commissioners, and the chairman to understand what their interests were. And I think in particular, being able to speak with Elliot Kay, the CPSC chairman, was really valuable. That helped me understand what his views were and to see that they actually aligned very closely with my own. So you were talking about my background in data and open government and transparency. That's also very clearly a value that he has. And as I was researching the organization, it was clear to me that that's not just something that he was saying. That's also something that he believes. So we have CPSC has a recall API, and it's not just an API, but it's an API that there are updates to. So other agencies have published APIs. But how many have necessarily gone back and continued to make improvements to them? So he demonstrates that kind of commitment, and that was something that I liked a lot. We also made it clear that he doesn't have patience for chasing technology or a CIO who's going to pursue technology for technology's sake. We need to make sure that it's really focusing on the mission and that it's delivering results. And again, that's another value that's very, very core to my own, the accountability piece. And so all of that led to me identifying, seeing somebody who was somebody who really cared about the organization, but also cared about information management and the CIO. I know in a lot of organizations it can be a real challenge for CIOs to get the attention of a senior leader, to get a seat at the table, to have a conversation with the missions. So that was very, very helpful. And then also being able to hear the other perspectives from the commissioners and the executive director and the deputy executive directors.
And have you spent time in those mission areas as well? I mean, it's always great to talk to the leadership, but it's also probably just as well in educational to spend time, if you will, on the ground with the people who are doing the mission day in and day out.
Yeah, absolutely. So as soon as I came in, I set up meetings with all of the mission executives from all of the program areas to learn about what they do and what their information needs are today, what they are in the future, and then also to solicit their candid opinions about my organization, about what we do well, so I don't change that, and about maybe what we don't do so well, so that I can identify areas that we can improve on. And all of those have been really great for helping to understand the organization at large. And one of the core themes that I took away from that I thought was very positive was in the areas where my team was deeply engaged with the mission and working to understand the process and contributing to those discussions, I got very positive impact. And in the areas where we were more in the role of order takers, just tell us what you need and we'll give you what you ask for, I received more criticism. Now, I'm very pleased that was in the minority, but it was very, very good to hear that not only is there interest at the very senior levels, but also the people leading the missions see the IT organization as an important partner for realizing their objectives as well.
And I hear that often, the partnership that has to come, which is a great segue to a little bit about your office, the makeup of your office, how many federal employees, how many contractors, and of course, what's your IT budget for 2016?
So our makeup of our office, we have 42 employees and about as many contractors, although many of those work on development projects. So there's some ebb and flow to that number. And our budget for this year is around $15 million. And that represents just about all of the IT spending for the agency. So it's mostly consolidated in my area. It's divided among pretty much all of the standard A130 functions. There's the operations and maintenance functions, and then development support functions. And so, and we do an awful lot of engagement with the mission areas. Yeah, it's a really great team. During the interview process, I'd asked about staffing challenges. You know, that's one of those questions you don't want to get surprised about. And my new boss had said that we had a very, very good management team, professional, and they worked well together. And I thought that might be too good to be true. But then I thought, well, even if it was, I had a very positive boss who was loyal. But after 3 months, I think that what I've observed is that he was right, that they really are very, very capable. I have a very capable team here.
And I know we'll talk a little bit more later on in the program about the workforce, so it's good to see you now. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll jump into some older priorities, and we'll get into some new priorities. My guest today is Jim Rolfes, the Consumer Product Safety Commission Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Jim Rolfes, the Consumer Product Safety Commission's Chief Information Officer. So, Jim, before break, we were talking a little bit about your background. We talked about how do you support the mission of the CPSC as its CIO. Let's jump into some priorities. About 5 years ago, when I spoke with the CPSC CIO, one of the big ones was a major effort to modernize the commission systems. Let's talk about the status of that effort and what benefits is the CPSC seeing from those changes.
A little context on that. So in 2008, Congress passed the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act, and in that had a number of new requirements for the agency, and a number of those requirements required some new information technology capabilities for the agency. And so that was really a significant change for the IT organization at CPSC, and it signaled a change from fairly basic operations and maintenance IT organization to a much more sophisticated kind of CIO organization with robust development and investment management and project management capabilities. And so the previous CIO made that transition very successfully and built out those programs. And the team here put together programs and plans and moved forward on a number of initiatives. And some of those include, and this is certainly not a comprehensive inventory of those things, but saferproducts.gov, that was developed and it was launched. And it included an API that provides access to recall data. So that was a significant improvement. There were also a number of new ways to engage with the consumers, but also manufacturers. And, of course, there are improvements on internal support systems for managing the work of the agency. So new responsibilities, there's new processes internally, and those needed to be automated. And those were needed for improving processes on the regulatory functions, compliance functions, inspection, and even case management functions, sort of tying all of those things together. There were also some previously disconnected manual processes that were automated and then better integrated. And then also there was the legacy website for the agency. It was a static HTML-based website, and it got transitioned into a more modern web content management system. And so that was a significant enhancement for the agency as well. And work continues in that space. We're in the process of even now moving to the next iteration on that content management system.
All right. So it sounds like a lot got done over the last, 5 or 6 years since I talked to somebody. I mean, when you came in and looked at it, did you feel like you were walking in to a fairly modernized infrastructure systems applications layer? Where do you see it lying? Because, 6 years ago almost is still 6 years ago, and the technology back then is much different than the technology today. Give me a sense of kind of an outsider's perspective now that you're an insider.
I think probably like most agencies, there's a bit of a mix. I think it's Better than most. There's some platforms that I know we'd like to modernize. There are some platforms that are getting a little bit dated, but they're not all that bad. There was some work that was done to reduce stovepipes and to do some integration. I think there's some more work to do on that, and there's some opportunities for us to connect some additional information and flows across program areas. There's always work that can be done in that space. But from a technology perspective, I think we're in pretty good shape. I think taking a more enterprise view of our information and our information systems, I think that's pretty much the place where we're at today. So in 2008, 2009, 2010, as they were preparing for this initial modernization, there was a lot of focus on investment management and project management, and I think that was the right decision. I think that was the right area to focus on to get into that space. I think we are at a point now where looking at more of the architecture, the overall perspective of how all these pieces fit together and how they fit together more comprehensively, and how we can think more strategically long term, how we can position ourselves for the future, how we can make decisions so that we're better able to catch the future demand in the organization, recognizing that there is a fair amount of uncertainty. We don't know what kinds of new hazards may emerge, how new production methods may create new hazards. But how do we position ourselves for that kind of flexibility? I think that's the next area where we should focus.
All right, Jim, you piqued my interest when you talked about architecture. I'm one of the few people probably in the world that gets excited when you talk about architecture. The 2B, the as-is, you remember those OMB days. Does that mean you guys are developing either a new strategic plan for your office, or are you developing maybe a new architecture or updating your current architecture? How does that fit into this discussion?
So we'll certainly be looking at a new IT strategic plan for the organization, and we'll be looking at information and information management that pervades our operating plans and our strategic plans as central to our organization as it is most other organizations. And taking the functional view that we get in those documents and aligning that so that we can group that logically from technology and process, and as we're investing, get the most value that we can for that. Identify solutions that will allow us to get common capabilities, do more, because the team here has done things like component-based design and reusable services, but expand those kinds of things. Look at service or design methods that separate our application logic more from our data so that we can reuse the information more seamlessly.
From just a timing standpoint, do you foresee that strategic plan coming later in 2016, or is it already in the works?
So to some extent, the conversations that I've been having with the mission area executives, that's really the first step, is gaining an understanding of what the mission functions are, trying to get a sense of what their current information management needs are and what they perceive as their longer term information management needs are, and what their program, where they think their programs are going. That's the beginning of that. My goal is to have a draft this year. It probably won't be the final, but to work hard to get a draft together.
All right. Well, something to look forward to, and maybe once it's done, we can have you back on the show and talk a little bit more about it. Let me jump to another priority from last time I talked to the CIO, and this was something you actually mentioned, the product safety database. This was a major effort for the CPSC. It's up and running, obviously. It's so give me a sense of the difference it's making for the agency, and what are you looking for to move to the future? I imagine the cloud will probably get involved in that somehow. Tell me about the status and your future goals for it.
This is really exciting. This is available currently online through our website, and in 2011 it was made available online. This was one of the requirements of CPSIA, and it's there. And then in 2012 there was an update to the API for the recall database, and So there was, the API was released in 2012, and then last year there was an update, and that update was intended to make the API easier to use, and it improved error handling capabilities. So we've received some feedback from people who were using that database, and we've made those improvements. We're also looking at expanding the information that's available for API for incident reports, and are planning on a release for later this spring.
One thing about APIs, you hear that often, and we know APIs are application programming interfaces. It's a piece of software code. Basically, what happens is somebody can take that piece of code and put it on their website to help bring in data or do what? Give me a sense of how that API is being used today.
I don't believe we track specifically how the consumers of it are using it. We make it available to communities. Occasionally, we'll have conversations with manufacturers who have questions about how they can get better access to it. In a lot of cases, this information is used to create apps or goes into websites that identifies recalled information. So when a product is identified and it has a defect and has safety issue, it goes into this database. We publish it through this API. These websites and apps, they take that information and they make that available for their subscribers. So the idea here is that information, of course, is available on cpsc.gov, but that's not the only place where people have to go to get that. We want to make that as available as possible.
Do you get a sense that there's other opportunities for APIs?
I think there's a lot of opportunities for data exchanges, for sharing information with, for data acquisition and for inbound data and for outbound data sharing.
And I know we're going to touch upon data in a little bit. It's a fascinating thing, the API. I think the government has not necessarily taken advantage of it like they should. And if they have, I think there's always that challenge of communicating what is it and how does it work and why should people pay attention to it. Jim, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll jump into some of your new priorities. My guest this week is Jim Rolfes, the Consumer Product Safety Commission's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Jim Rolfes, the Consumer Product Safety Commission's Chief Information Officer. Jim, before break, we're talking about some old priorities. Now let's talk about some new priorities. What are you trying to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
So we have a couple of significant initiatives going on. One of the things we're really pushing on is the risk assessment methodology. And this is a system that helps us identify most important shipments for inspection coming in at the ports. And we're a small agency and, of course, have very limited resources. So using a risk-based approach, help focus those resources on areas of highest potential impact is vital. We can't possibly inspect all of the shipments coming in, and so we need to work with partners like Customs and Border Protection. We need to identify what kinds of characteristics for the information of the shipments are most critical for the information for the shipments coming in, and then how do we target those for evaluation. And so we're doing some work on that, and we're doing some updates on that. So we have that underway. Another key effort is the virtual desktop infrastructure, and other agencies have done VDI as well. We've been piloting it, and this is a very exciting effort. This is one of our big technology pushes in my shop, and we've had a successful pilot, and now we're ready to move forward with some more wide-scale implementation this year. Probably won't be the full agency by the end of the year. There are going to be some special cases, some special systems that won't be able to be virtualized immediately, but a lot of the staff would be migrated over to VDI by the end of the year. And we see a lot of benefits coming out of this, including reduced operating costs, more consistent user experience, elimination of system conflicts. I recall many times having to have my Java upgraded and degraded for different mandatory training classes, not necessarily in this agency, but some other agencies. We can address that easily in a virtualized environment. We get increased security. We can enhance our e-discovery capabilities, data protection, of course. We'll get improvements in our software asset management and license management. And of course, this is going to be key to enabling BYOD for the agency.
All right, so there's a couple big ones there. Let me ask a little bit about the risk assessment one. Now, when someone hears risk assessment methodology, they think a process. Are you putting technology behind it? Like, why is this, for instance, the CIO versus your mission side or your management side? Where's the technology fit in with that?
So this is definitely supporting mission side. So this is driven by the mission areas, and the development side is being coordinated by our office.
So it would be a piece of software, maybe is through a mobile device, through what, that would eventually end up being used by the mission side that you guys are working on?
It's software. So there are business rules that are identified by the mission side, and then those are automated and then made available to the field inspectors to help identify where they should focus their inspection efforts.
Obviously, whenever you do a program like this, it's not just a lift and shift. There's a re-looking at the business processes. There's a re-looking at the technology behind it all. Is that part of the discussion, too? And how big of a change do you expect this to be in terms of how you guys do risk assessment?
Well, that's part of the evaluation. Is the initial risk assessment really is looking at evaluating shipments, but there are risk assessments. It's essentially prioritization. How do you make determinations for where you focus resources more broadly? So part of this is evaluating whether there's broader applicability for this kind of capability.
You said you talked about how you guys have to work with other agencies such as CBP. Are you looking at their risk assessment methodology too? I mean, I know this gets into the mission side a bit, but sometimes there's a tech side to that mission side as well, of course, at CBP or some of the other agencies.
When shipments come in, there's a common form that manufacturers use, and they send their data in, and that's primarily routed through CBP. And so that's where we would be collecting that information. And so we have to work with the partners.
Let's jump over to the other part. You mentioned VDI. That's a big one. It's good to hear you guys are piloting it and you're moving out on it. Can you just talk a little bit about that pilot? How many people were part of it, and how did you make it work? When I hear VDI, there's so many different flavors of it. What kind of flavor did you try out?
We're using the Citrix version of VDI, and we started fairly small. So we've done an alpha and a beta pilot. Our alpha pilot was in the IT shop, and it was 13 people. We started fairly small. Actually, it wasn't just in the IT shop. We also had one of our deputy executive directors who was part of this. A little bit of risk on that one, huh? So we've been piloting that, and as it happens, I'm also in that pilot group. And so when I came into CPSC, I didn't get a computer. I didn't get a laptop. I didn't get a desktop. They gave me a very small box that sits on my desk, and my team didn't give me the option about having a computer. So I've been on VDI since I came to CPSC, and so definitely been a guinea pig. And I have I was a little skeptical about it. I've heard the promise of VDI, and I told them I'm not so sure about these guys, and it's worked out fine. I tend to do a lot of work outside of the office. I typically hauled my laptop with me everywhere and was constantly working, and I thought this would be a big deal. There are some places where I work where I don't have a connection, and that can be troublesome for VDI, but was really not an issue for hasn't been an issue for me. I've gone to it like a duck to water. And then also we have some representatives. We have 9. We were going to have a few more, but it turned out there was some software that wasn't virtualized yet that precluded us from including a few more. But we have 9 of our mission area people who are evaluating the VDI. So we're working through the evaluation process on that, working out the kinks in that, and then moving full speed ahead through the end of the fiscal year to get significant, the majority of our headquarters personnel, which is where most of our employees are, moved over to VDI by the end of the fiscal year.
You have basically a keyboard, a mouse, and a screen, and then there's a box that's hooked into the main, you know, local area network or wide area network. But when you're outside of the office, you're using your personal laptop, per se, to log into the VDI. Do I understand that correctly?
Yeah, that's how I log in remotely.
And are you using, like, a lot of times you see PC on a stick, but you're probably, it sounds like you're going through like a VPN of sorts to log through Citrix to log on to the virtual network.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Okay.
I've got the two-factor VPN access. Yeah.
Okay. I think it's interesting because so many agencies are moving down that path as well. You know, they talk about thin client or zero client. So I think there's, as you mentioned earlier, there's just a ton of benefits. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to jump into a topic that I think is at the heart of CPSC, big data. But first, we'll take a break. My guest today is Jim Rolfes, the Consumer Product Safety Commission Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Jim Rolfes, the Consumer Product Safety Commission's Chief Information Officer. Jim, before break, we're talking about a lot of your priorities. We're talking about VDI as well as risk assessment methodology. Let's talk about a major priority for CPSC, all about the data. As I talked about Commissioner Robinson before, and she talked about why data is so important to CPSC. Talk a little bit about how you're addressing the big data challenge.
When people talk about big data, they usually talk about it in terms of the three Vs, the volume, variety, and velocity. And almost always people are thinking about it in terms of volume. So I don't think we currently have really an issue in terms of big data in terms of volume, at least not today. Maybe at some point in the future there will be a situation where we have a whole lot more data, a whole lot more data sources, and we may have a big data issue from that. But from variety and velocity perspectives, I think those are areas where CPSC could potentially benefit from big data approaches. So today, CPSC gets data from many sources. We get hospital information for injuries. That's a core source of information. We get it from manufacturers. We get it from the public. We get it from partner organizations. And we get this information in many different forms. So this variety of data and processing this data and getting it ready for processing takes a fair amount of effort. So I think exploring big data in terms of variety is an area that has some merits. And we are looking at open source data technologies to evaluate whether that's something that we can move into. We're also looking at velocity. So we have some regulatory time frames. There are time constraints. Things have to move through certain processes. We have dates, times, days that certain things have to happen. And if we can get data prepared for processing faster, that will help us meet those timelines. And so big data may be a way for us to help doing that. And then, of course, more broadly, if we can get data processed and structured into forms that can help make decisions, help the organization draw conclusions, make decisions on products or, well, safety in general, then that means that unsafe situations can be addressed that much quicker. It may not mean months or years faster, but a few days, it might reduce some incidents, and that's worth considering as well. So in terms of big data, we're looking at that, and we're at the early stages in that. And we're, you know, this is, to some extent, this is an employee development activity, too. So we're exploring this internally. We're looking at how do we build this capability with our internal staff, not looking to spend a whole lot of resources to bring in external experts, but how do we build this capability and get smart among ourselves? We're very interested in the data, very interested in big data. There's some work here for us to do and some growing that we have to do.
Now, currently, a lot of times when you talk big data, there's the database issue, the enterprise warehouse or some such place where that data lives, or it's at least it's all pulling from. Is that already set up within CPSC where either A, there's an enterprise data warehouse or some kind of service-oriented architecture or some kind of, you know, push and pull of data? Is that already happening?
There are many sources of data, there isn't a central authoritative data warehouse. And so there's potential for that. And you know, one of the areas that I think may be worth exploring here is the idea of a data lake, a place where data can be stored for secondary or ancillary purposes. So we're not necessarily always drawing from the production source, but we have a source of reference data so that it can be used for reporting or analytical purposes without potentially impacting the production systems. We're looking at that, and we're interested in how can we do that in a way that is effective, scalable, and also cost effective. That leads us to exploring things like, of course, open source and cloud alternatives.
And it's interesting because cloud actually hasn't come up during this conversation much. So where does cloud play with your needs for data? You talk about looking at open source data technologies. Is that the piece where the cloud comes in as well?
So certainly interested in cloud. We haven't moved far into cloud yet for our new web content management system. We are looking to move to the cloud for that. That'll be one of our big cloud forays. But I think moving into the future, I think cloud will be a bigger factor. So for some of these other things as well, particularly big data, we may also be looking at that. I think that hosting our own internal cloud, we'll have to evaluate the cost benefit and risk implications. But my sense is that we can probably be more efficient in the cloud in that space.
And then the open source side, where does that come into play in terms of your planning and your initiatives?
I'm a big fan of open source. I like open source a lot. I think there are some cost advantages to that. There's the collaborative nature of open source. There's transparency, and you know, if we're looking to share information, and a lot of the information that we use and that we collect, we do want to share. We do want to be open and transparent about. I think that the use of open source platforms can help facilitate that. So I'm a proponent of open source platforms.
Is there any plans yet to maybe test them out, or are you looking to buy? I know open source sometimes can be free. Sometimes there's free platforms with services that come on top of it. Is that something in the short term that you're starting to look at?
So we're doing some informal, small-scale evaluation within my office, some internal small-scale evaluations of some of the tools, but we're still in the formal or in the informal evaluation stage. So we haven't put forward a formal presentation for formal investment consideration at this point.
Maybe something to follow up with you on in a couple of weeks, couple of months or so, just to see where you're at with that.
Yeah.
The other piece of data when we talk about is the tools necessary. Now, you talked about the idea of the cloud, and you talked about the idea of open source. What about business intelligence or business analysis type of software? Is that, I'm sure it's being used to some extent, but are you looking for new or different types of tools?
We currently use desktop analytics tools, so high-powered professional statistical analysis packages, and those are currently desktop products. We are on the verge of implementing server-based versions of those, which are going to introduce new capabilities for collecting information and sharing information, as well as the capabilities for analyzing the information. And so we're right on the verge of releasing that for our internal community. So that's just about should happen later this spring. But it's not all about all of the data improvements aren't just about tools. And I think some of the more important ones can be not tool-based at all. So I think enhancing greater awareness and understanding of things like data quality, so that the organization at large is thinking about data quality in a consistent way and understands the importance of data quality from a context perspective, that data quality in context with one program, even if we're talking about the same data element itself, may not necessarily, that a certain level of data quality in one program for a particular data element may not meet the same standards in another program. So there, and then also understanding the various dimensions of data quality and having an understanding and awareness about how those dimensions can affect data. I think also understanding standards, identifying common data standards to enhance interoperability across program lines, to make that easier, make that uh, make information that's collected for different program purposes more readily connectable. And then also looking at ways to streamline data acquisition methods so that we have common ways of collecting information. I think that's an opportunity for exploration, and of course, ways of sharing it in the same way.
So a lot of data process improvement sounds like are on their way. It leads me down the path to ask the question of a chief data officer or some sort of chief data scientist. Is that on the horizon as well?
My thinking is probably not. That would be a larger policy discussion. But again, we're a very small agency, and so the kind of specialization that it would require to have a dedicated chief data officer position, it would be a significant dedicated resource function. I think it would likely be a collateral duty or a community function, something where my thinking at this point is that bringing together data experts from across the organization to collaborate on these kinds of topics.
And I think that there's many ways to really understand data and make data better. I think, you know, as you said, bringing together the community sometimes is maybe the easier or more logical way than trying to put someone in charge of it all. I know that's always challenging as well. Another place where there's a lot of data is around cybersecurity, of course. There's a lot going on there, whether it's the Cyber Sprint or the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program or so many other challenges around cybersecurity. Just give me a sense, you know, obviously it's a sensitive topic. How is CPSC dealing with cybersecurity?
You know, we were talking about priorities earlier. It's one of my core areas of focus for this year. We're looking at improving our security posture across a variety of fronts, not least of which is continuous monitoring. But we were fortunate that we got a bit of a bump in our IT budget specifically for cybersecurity, and so we're looking at improvements in privileged user management. That's a core focus for us this year. You know, I think that the work that we're doing with VDI is going to improve our overall posture for security as well and data protections. We're looking at our configuration management and how we're managing those kinds of things as well, contingency planning. So we're really looking at a wide array of areas to make improvements on in that space. So it's something that's a core focus for me, and it's also something that has senior leadership attention as well. So I think that's a very promising thing that I think that we're, by and large, especially for a small agency, I think we've got a pretty decent security program. But you know, as with pretty much all agencies in the government, we've got work to do, and I think that the leadership support and attention is very helpful for that.
It's nice to have the leadership support and attention, but also the budget. So a little bit of a bump is always helpful. Jim, it sounds like we could probably talk a little bit longer, but unfortunately we are out of time for today. I really do appreciate you coming on the show. My guest today was Jim Rolfes, the Consumer Product Safety Commission's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Jim, thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you, Jason.
You've been listening to Ask